Welcome to the Real Estate Guys Radio Show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. We know you have questions, and we know that because you send them to us. Today, we have answers. It's Ask the Guys, your chance to ask the Real Estate Guys a question. And our opportunity to answer them, we've got a bunch of great ones today on the Real Estate Guys Radio Program. The Real Estate Guys are throwing a party and you're invited. Join us at the New Orleans Investment Conference, November 1st through 4th. Now in its 45th year, it's the nation's longest running investment conference and features some of the biggest names in economics and investing, including Doug Casey, Dennis Gartman, Rick Rule, and Peter Schiff. The Real Estate Guys are speaking in multiple sessions, attending lots of others, and we're hosting a hospitality suite one of the evenings for our friends and listeners, including some VIPs for you to mingle with. So make plans today to join the Real Estate Guys at the New Orleans Investment Conference. With everything going on in the world, no serious investor can afford to miss it. For all the details, send an email to neworleans@realestateguysradio.com, and it will tell you how to get upgraded tickets and join the party. That's neworleans@realestateguysradio.com. And we'll see you in New Orleans. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys Radio Program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, it's our co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
One of the greatest things about being the Real Estate Guys is our amazing listeners. And every few weeks, we like to do Ask the Guys. That's where you're the guest, and you ask all kinds of questions. And oh my goodness, we get so many great questions. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, just go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click the button that says Ask the Guys. We can't answer every question. Obviously, there's just too many that come in. But what we try to do is pick ones that we think are universal in terms of their appeal, where there could be lots of things people can learn. So our only caveats today and every Ask the Guys are the following. We are not tax professionals or legal professionals. We don't give advice. We give ideas and information. So with that, let's go to our first question from William in Maryville, Tennessee. He says, hey guys, to purchase a single family residence for somewhere around $200,000, what he would consider a B residence, with 20% down as a rental, what's the average amount of the spread, the difference between monthly rent and expenses that should be expected to make it a good investment? All right, William, well, this is a great question, and obviously personal investment philosophy dictates that there's lots of different answers, but I think we can discuss kind of the range of reality that we see as lots and lots of our listeners buy these types of properties across the country and even in other countries. Now that we're heard in over 190 countries, lots of people are buying real estate as rentals, and you definitely look at the spread. How much can you make in terms of positive cash flow from a single family house? Now, we start with what we call the gross rent multiplier, and you may have heard this expressed as the 1% rule. If a property can take in gross rent 1% of its purchase price, so a $200,000 house would need to take in $2,000 a month as its base rent, then that doesn't consider your operating cost and all that. It's just kind of a round number. If it doesn't make 1%, then it's going to be a little tighter on cash flow. If it makes more than 1%, cash flow is probably a little better. But again, that's not a rule, even though people call it the 1% rule. It's really not a rule. I would say that the average person that buys a home in this price range and expects to hold it for a rental with 20% down is probably making a couple hundred dollars a month.
Yeah, you make money in real estate, in rental real estate, four different ways. So you have the cash flow, the difference between the income and the expenses, and then the mortgage. So there's that formula, and you should know that formula. And then you make money on the tax breaks, which is the depreciation, the tax credits, and you should kind of have an idea what that is in your particular situation and what you can use. And so those two things affect cash flow. And cash flow is what you have to pay attention to control the property over a long period of time. There's two other ways you make money on investment real estate, and one of them is amortization, which is the pay down of the loan using the income from the property. And so even though that isn't a cash flow benefit to you, it is a profit benefit to you because every month when you make the payment, you get a little bit of debt relief or equity buildup on your balance sheet. And of course, the other one, the big one, and the one we talk about all the time is the equity, the appreciation on the property. As the value of the property goes up for whatever reason, the difference between what it's worth on the open market and what you have levered it for with your financing is equity. And new equity is equity that you didn't put in as a down payment, but that happened to you because you owned it. So the challenge is, and we know this from experience, when you focus too much on equity to the exclusion of cash flow, you can lose control of the property and lose both. You lose everything. So having a cushion is a lot less about return on investment to make it a good investment as much as it is to make sure that you can control it if there's a little bit of a downturn in your rents, if you have unexpected vacancies or expenses. So if you are in a market where there's a good supply and demand dynamic that favors long-term appreciation, then you might be able to sacrifice a little bit on the cash flow return on investment because you're anticipating over the long haul making that up in the value of the property. Or you may go into a property where you initially purchase it, and because it's not in great shape or the neighborhood is in transition, you may feel like, hey, I'm going to be a little thin on the cash flow when I first purchase it, but I have a plan to improve the cash flow over time, not that I'm necessarily counting on the market to do it for me, but things that I have under my control. Maybe I'm going to add new amenities. Maybe I'm going to turn a two-bedroom into a three-bedroom. I'm going to add storage. I'm going to find a way to generate a little bit more income. So it's not a simple formulaic answer to the question, but I would say that you definitely want to focus on making sure that you have positive cash flow and the ability to withstand a downturn so that if the cash flow is less than you expect, it doesn't put you underwater. And then making sure that your underlying expense and your largest expense is going to be your mortgage. In today's environment with low interest rates, I probably would favor a fixed rate over an adjustable, even though you could make the argument rates might come down a little bit. I think the potential for them to go up is still there, and there's not much further down that they can go. So at this stage of the game, I think fixed rates make sense. And that way you fixed your most substantial expenses against your income. And then it's just balancing the two to make sure it's positive, evaluating it, you know, at least once a year and making sure that, hey, if I didn't already own this property, would I buy it again? And deciding if it's time to sell or refinance and harvest some equity and go do it again.
You know, last few weeks we've been talking about different marketplaces and so on. And depending on where you are, right, in Tennessee, a $200,000 house might be a B residence. You know, in Memphis, Tennessee, or Little Rock, Arkansas, that's a $60,000 or $70,000 house. In Orlando, that might be a $250,000 house. In the Bay Area, in Northern California, that might be an $850,000 house. So you have to do the math. But in general, the big picture on this is what single-family rental homes do is over time, the tenant pays down or pays off the mortgage. Over time, income goes up and hopefully not as high as expenses. And over time, you're creating a portfolio of property that increases its asset value and increases its cash flow. That's the best case scenario for single family. We're always concerned about durability of the rent. So you want to pick a neighborhood, a county, and a state that are tenant landlord friendly, where there's a good number of prospective tenants at all time. But you know, the big picture on a couple hundred dollars a month, I mean, rarely does a single family house make more than a couple hundred dollars a month, maybe $200-$300 a month positive. And so a lot of investors get to the point where they're like, you know, when I look at my number, the big number that I want to have is passive income coming up every month, and I divide that by $200, I sure need a lot of houses. And so that's why so many investors start in single family and then move into the bigger asset classes where there are economies of scale and where you can get more play and better returns. But nothing wrong with starting with single family houses. Just know that what makes it a good investment is all of the things Russ talked about put together. The likelihood that the value goes up over time, that there'll be good tenants there for the long term, and that you'll be able to keep your expenses in check while maybe doing some of those things that increase value. It's a great question. Thanks for asking it. It's Ask the Guys today. Your questions, our answers. This next one comes from Lou in McKinleyville, California. Hey guys, been listening to you for the last couple of months and I love it. By the way, a great way to start a question to the guys is a nice compliment like that. So thank you very much. My question is, does it make sense at my age of 56 to purchase more multifamily properties? I have 6 units that are free and clear, and they generate around $5,700 a month in gross rents, and the property is worth about $775,000. So just stop right there. That's not quite the 1% rule, right? If the property's $775,000 and the 1% would be then $7,750. But again, that's market value. That has nothing to do with what you paid for it. Okay, back to Lou's question. I also own another property with 18 units. and I'm a licensed real estate agent working in both sales and property management. Looking forward to your response. All right. Well, first of all, age does play into your investment horizon, but you really have to think about what is it you want your investment to do for you at any age. At 56, you still got a lot of time left, buddy. I mean, that's you're a child. So I think, it makes sense to continue to build up your investment portfolio. But generally, so not just for you, Lou, but for folks listening, we tend to think in a terminology that we call critical mass.
Yeah. So in the early years of your investing career, and this comes right out of, you know, Financial Planning 101, you are about building up capital, building up equity, building up a nest egg that you can then deploy for cash flow. Most of the time, especially in real estate, investments tend to behave differently. They're cash flow investments, they're equity growth investments. When you don't need the income to live on early in life, it's usually a good idea to emphasize trying to build up that equity as long as you don't lose control of the cash flows we discussed earlier. Then as you begin to build up some equity, then the key is to really manage that equity, or what I call optimize the equity. And leverage plays a part in that. When you have a property that's paid for, you've got a lot of idle equity. It's very, very conservative, and that can be good from a financial standpoint. It's very, very risky from an asset protection standpoint because all that equity is directly attached and in the line of fire of the liability that the properties produce. And so there's a lot more to think about than just return on investment and growing your balance sheet and your financial statement. You also have to build a fortress around it. So I'm personally, even today, not a big fan of leaving a bunch of equity in a property. I think that there are safer ways to leverage the cash flow into harvesting the equity, creating positive cash flows. Again, if you can borrow at 5 and invest cash flow at 10, then you probably want to borrow as much 5 as you can get, especially if it means you're moving the equity away from the liability of the property. And so you may decide to buy additional properties with that, or you may decide to purchase mortgages and just rely strictly on the income. Well, you may decide to take a piece of it and buy some income and put it in something even more remotely safe from an asset protection point of view, like precious metals. We talk about that a lot. But I think the point is that your personal investment philosophy is going to play into it. You know, 56 is an age. If you're planning on retiring at 65 and you're relatively comfortable, then you're probably going to structure your portfolio more for safety and durability of income, and probably be less willing to go out there and take any chances on trying to grow anything because you don't need to. There's no need to do more if you feel like you're done. I'm guessing by the gist of your question, you're not done. You'd probably like to grow more. And so I would take a good hard look at that idle equity in the existing property, talk to some mortgage folks, find out what it would cost you to tap into some of that equity, and look at some options for how you could make a positive spread, maybe pick up some additional properties, factor in some of your asset protection and estate planning into that mix. It's a little bit more complicated, but this is the part that a lot of people in the real estate investing world don't talk about. Everybody talks about how to do deals, how to finance deals, how to crunch the numbers on deals, how to do market analysis. All that stuff's important. But remember, this is no different than paper assets in terms of you are managing cash flow statements and balance sheets, and you have to take into effect asset protection and estate planning. And a lot of real estate investors don't think that way because they're not dealing with professional financial advisors who are all trained in the paper world. They're just out there doing deals. So if you can marry those two worlds together, which is something I like to spend a lot of time thinking about and teaching, I think that you'll find that you have a lot of untapped potential in your financials, and you can execute some growth without taking undue risk.
Now, Lou, a couple of things. You mentioned that you're a licensed real estate agent and in both sales and property management. So obviously that probably qualifies you as a full-time real estate professional. Check with your tax advisor, but that's going to help out in your overall picture. It also puts you in the deal flow. And it may be that what you want to do is start emphasizing more investment property in your practice. Probably ought to pick up the Godfather's book, Bob Helm's book, Be in the Top 1%, which is all about showing real estate agents how they can not only become their own best clients by investing in income property, but also by specializing with investors, because you can get into good deal flow that way, and that might give you some great vantage point as you look to build your real estate portfolio. You know, for a lot of folks, they like the peace of mind and as of free and clear real estate. So I'm in Russ's camp. I don't like to leave idle equity sitting around. There's too many risks to that. But I also honor the perspective that when you own a property free and clear, there's less counterparty risk. So you just have to, you know, figure that out for your own personal investment philosophy. But certainly at 56, you still got plenty of time to go. So keep up the good work.
And before we sign off on Lou's question, Robert, I got one more thing I'd like to just chime in on, because a lot of times when people get to a point where a property is paid for, they've depleted their depreciation schedule. So Lou, if you're paying income tax on any of your income, then you're probably going to want to take a look at picking up some more properties just to bring your income tax down. And again, maybe a little bit complex. You can check out some of Tom Wheelwright's work. He does a good job explaining how that works. But one thing to take a look at anytime you get on the tail end of an ownership with any property is moving your portfolio around just to pick up some new depreciation schedules.
It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. We got lots more questions ahead. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, I'm Brad Sumrock. At this year's AIM NACON, you'll find out why apartments have been and continue to be the hottest sector for real estate investing, and why more and more people are moving their money out of Wall Street into real estate, specifically apartment buildings. Plus, with the new tax laws, learn how owning and investing in apartments are even more attractive right now in 2019. Learn from some of the best speakers and investors in the country. Gain access to industry experts and service providers from all over the USA that can help you earn more money and pay less taxes. Meet and network with hundreds of other apartment investors and other like-minded individuals. So whether you are new to investing or already an experienced apartment owner that wants to go bigger and faster, this conference is definitely for you. I'll see you there.
Join Robert Kiyosaki, Harry Dent, Tom Wheelwright, the Apartment King, Brad Sumrock, and the Real Estate Guys at the second annual Apartment Investor Mastery National Conference. It takes place Saturday, August 10th in Dallas, Texas. For all the details, send an email to aimnatcon, that's AIMNATCON, at realestateguysradio.com. aimnatcon at realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And if you're serious about learning how to invest in real estate, listen to the Real Estate Guys. They really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station and all the time at realestateguysradio.com and all your finer podcast locations. It's Ask the Guys. Every few weeks, we like to dig into the mailbag and answer our great listeners' questions. This next question comes from Todd in Hamden, Connecticut. He says, hi, I own 2 3-family houses, so we might call those triplexes. One is paid for, and I have a line of credit of $146,000 against it just in case something comes along. The other 3-family, I owe $120,000 on it, and the property next door just sold for $309,000 and others in the area for $320,000. Right now I have in cash about $170,000. I'm looking to step up to buying apartment buildings. What do you recommend? I make about $55,000 a year net on those properties. Should I sell them and combine my cash and move it to commercial apartment buildings? Thank you for any input. All right, Todd. Well, the reason I wanted to ask this question after our last question was obviously the idea of moving from the 1-4 world into 5 and above, and no investor left behind. The way that loans work for investment property is 1-4 units are in a category of qualification, a category of the lenders that service those loans and originate those loans. So a single family house, a duplex, a triplex, a fourplex, those are all properties that fall under one category of commercial finance. Then there's the commercial properties that are 5 units and above, whether it's 5 units, 20 units, or 175 units. That's a different type of financing. So one of the decisions you have to make as a real estate investor is, when does it make sense to go from residential financing to commercial financing? and there's a lot of differences there. Typically with residential, the lender's looking to you primarily to qualify. You have to have income, credit, all those things. And then there'll certainly be an appraisal and they'll want to know what the rent roll looks like. On commercial property, it's much more about the property. The property needs to cover the expenses and the debt service and then some. And you're going to be checked out in terms of your credit worthiness, but primarily it's the property. So at this point, with two triplexes, two three-family houses, one with a line of credit against it, one with a commercial loan against it, but in both cases, that being about half of the value, that gives you some room to play.
Yeah, I think when it comes to looking at what you want to do in your portfolio, it comes back to what we always say, your personal investment philosophy. It depends on what it is you're trying to accomplish and what you're willing to do. So since we don't know that, we really can't factor that in. There's the diversification component, though. And if you do decide to trade everything in and go into one big property, you're going to want to make sure that you really know what you're doing in that space and in that property and in that market and with that property management team, because it's single point failure. Although you have multiple doors, you probably only have one marketplace, one property manager. So you want to make sure that you've really done your homework on all that stuff. If you haven't done apartment buildings before you start going out there and throwing money around, probably want to get into some training. So we've got Brad Sumrock is a guy that does a great job, we think, in training apartment investors. And you can find out more about him, I think, by sending an email to Sumrock, S-U-M-R-O-K, at realestateguysradio.com. And the auto reply should give you information about him and his training. But all he does is teach people how to do apartment buildings. And he's got specific marketplaces. He may or may not be in the marketplace you're in, but the principles apply. So number one, I would definitely focus on some education. Number two, you might want to go visit with a commercial loan broker in a market you think you'd be interested in investing in, and just get a feel for what your financials need to look like and what the loan process is all about, and find out from them what you need to have and do to be able to qualify in whatever the current lending environment is. And that's number two. The other thing is look at your existing properties with the critical eye. In other words, what Robert often calls zero-sum thinking. The idea is, if I didn't already own this property, would I buy it as an investment? Because you may decide, hey, you know what? It was great when I bought it and it's done its job. But from here to the future, I think I can do better elsewhere. Or you may look at it and go, hey, you know what? If I was out looking for a property right now, I would absolutely buy this property because I think the future is bright. And that'll give you a little bit of guidance. Another factor is how long you've owned some of those properties and what's left in the depreciation schedule. Sounds like you still got a ways to go, so you're probably okay there. But always factor that in. As we mentioned before, that's another consideration. And then sometimes you can build around an existing property management crew. If you're doing your own property management, maybe that's a different story. But if you have current property managers, you may want to add some properties into the mix, because the single most important person on your team when it comes to income properties is that property manager. And if you've got somebody that's doing a great job in terms of keeping your units occupied, keeping your expenses down, keeping your tenants happy, mitigating the risk of unhappy people suing you or damaging your property, then that's a relationship you want to invest in as well. And one of my favorite things to do is go talk to a property manager and say, gee, Mr. Property Manager, you're awesome. If I were to put something in your portfolio to manage that would make you look like an absolute superstar and make you happy, what would that look like? And let them tell you. And they can help you, because it's not really stepping up to an apartment building. It's just a vehicle. And I think that really what you're looking for is, what kind of a financial result are you trying to produce? What do you have to work with? And that's just what's on your financial statement, talking to the lender, what's going on in your tax situation, talking to your CPA, and who's on your team, and what markets do you feel comfortable with that you feel like you know or would be willing to learn? So when you do all of that, it begins to be more clear. It gives you more clarity about what it is that would be appropriate for you in your particular situation. So there's no hard and fast answer. But again, if you do decide to step into a niche or a product class or a market you don't know, build relationships and get some education before you start making your moves financially.
Now, Russ, as you mentioned to Lou, this idea of optimizing your portfolio comes to mind when I look at your numbers, Todd, because you definitely could see more leverage here. And based on the cash flows, that's going to work. You have some cash in hand, could get some more from refinancing. That will let you play on a bigger scale. couple of other points about just the apartment space. It's very competitive right now, and cap rates are compressed everywhere, meaning people are paying more for the same stream of income, so the yields, the returns, are lower than we've seen them in a long time. Doesn't mean apartments aren't great. Love apartments for a lot of reasons, like the economies of scale, like the efficiencies involved, like the fact that the demand tends to be solid because there are always people that need to rent those types of properties. But getting started, totally agree on the education point of view. You've already got a solid base, and it's just understanding how your portfolio and your loans and your tax position even change when you get into bigger stuff. Now, on a quick aside, just the fact that two properties could net $55,000 a year, more than the average salary in America, just as a testimony to how great real estate is. And the fact that you've got a line of credit, should you use it, awesome. As we learned in the downturn last time around, you can't rely on those lines of credit because whoever's extended you that credit can stop it at a moment's notice. And when times are tough, they do. So just don't bank, quote unquote, on that. But having it is a great tool, but you may be able to, you know, optimize a little better. So great question. Thanks for listening, Todd. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions are answers. We've got more when we come back. Plus, we'll play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Elms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Memphis is famous for being the home of the king of rock and roll, but it's also the king of cash flow. If you're looking for affordable cash flow properties, it's hard to beat Memphis. Get your portfolio rocking and more cash flowing your way by calling Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Terry's the king of turnkey properties. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's Tips for Turnkey Rental Property Investing Report. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey@realestateguysradio.com.
Real Estate Guys listeners, are you tired of losing real estate deals due to financing issues? Have you had enough of waiting on banks, lenders, and investor groups to fund new projects? What if there were a way to eliminate all the hassle and invest in real estate on your own terms? I'm here to tell you there is. Patrick Donahoe here from Paradigm Life. I'm an Investopedia Top 100 Most Influential Financial Advisor, and I recently wrote a best-selling book about the financial strategy that changed my entire investment model, and the one that could change yours. To get a copy of my book for free and learn how you can maximize your real estate portfolio by acting as your own bank, send an email to mybank@realestateguysradio.com. Don't make another real estate deal without reading my book first. Email mybank@realestateguysradio.com now to get your copy for free.
Hey, I'm Jim Grant. I'm the editor and indeed the founder of Grant's Interest Rate Observer. And you, ladies and gentlemen, you lucky people, are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show today. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions are answers. Hey, if you're unclear about where you're going in your life, then make plans to spend the third weekend of the new year in Lake Las Vegas for Create Your Future, our annual goal-setting retreat. It's unlike any of our other education, but it is absolutely life-changing. We've just opened registration, so you can find out all the details on the website at realestateguysradio.com. Under events, every 8 to 10 weeks, we like to reach into our email grab bag and answer your questions for Ask the Guys. We've got more questions, but before we get back to those, let's play real estate trivia. That's your chance to win a prize by knowing today's real estate trivia question. In just a minute, I'm going to ask you a question that has something to do with real estate. As soon as you think you know the answer or just want to guess, send your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Be sure to include your name, the answer to the question, and your mailing address. Because if you're the winner, we're going to send you an awesome book called The One Thing That Changed Everything. This is a compilation of some amazing stories from some incredible people. You're going to dig this book. That could be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week, we were talking about lifestyle investing, and we asked this. Florida is the number two state when it comes to production of strawberries in the U.S. Which state ranks first in growing strawberries? Well, the answer is California, with more than 10 times as many strawberries grown as number two, Florida. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Speaking of California, the state of California is known as the Golden State. What was it previously called? Yeah, before it was called the Golden State, it was called something else. What was that? If you know, want to guess, or want to look it up, quickly get your best guess to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include the answer to the question, plus your name and mailing address, so that if you're the winner, we can send you the one thing that changed everything. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's one of our favorite shows, Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click the button that says Ask the Guys. This next question comes from Greg in Auckland, New Zealand. Hey guys, first off, what a brilliant show you two put together each week. Absolutely chock full of gold nuggets. Thank you.
All caps, by the way.
Well, thank you, Greg. I wanted to ask if syndication, the process to raise capital, is possible on single-family homes, as a lot of your shows reference the larger deals, multifamily, commercial, senior living, etc. I'm just starting out developing my first property, and raising capital is a struggle, so looking forward to any advice you can share on this. That would be hugely appreciated. Thank you, Greg. All right, Greg, well, the idea of syndication is simply aggregating capital to do a deal. It doesn't have to be a bigger deal. We like to think of syndication in a way to go bigger, faster, because you can raise money to do bigger deals when you don't have all the money. And frankly, it's not that much harder to raise $5 million than it is $500,000. But it's hard to start off with a $5 million raise. So the short answer is yes, absolutely, positively, you can syndicate a single family home. Say one of those houses William was talking about in our first question, William from Tennessee, a $200,000 property. Now, obviously, that is a relatively modest property, but if you got four people to each put in $50,000, you could buy that property for cash. Now, again, there's reasons why you'd want to not use cash and so on, but my point is that a syndication can be modest. It doesn't have to be millions and millions of dollars. However, there is a threshold that does make sense for syndicators because there are some costs associated with doing the deal, especially on the legal side. So a tiny deal isn't going to make sense from that perspective for syndication because you're going to burden the deal with a lot of costs.
Well, I think that what you want to do is think about building a portfolio. And instead of just syndicating a single property or single family home property, relatively inexpensive property, you're going to buy a collection of them. And maybe you go find a developer who's got some closeout inventory and you can take down a bunch. You might be able to find another investor who's exiting their position for whatever reason, personal reasons, not because the properties or the market aren't great. And you could pick up that portfolio. That could be a way to do it. They might even want to stay in the deal, just kind of your typical owner carry back for a piece of it if they felt like you were competent to be able to run it for them. The other thing is you don't just have to syndicate capital. You can also syndicate credit. So sometimes when people want to be in the single family home space, the best loans are conventional loans in that residential 1-4. The problem is most of those get backed up by Fannie and Freddie, and you've got a 10 loan limit per borrower. And even then, you need to be careful to make sure that you can get all the way up to that 10 loan limit and work very carefully with your residential mortgage broker, hopefully somebody that specializes in working with investors to figure that out. But if you're tapped out or don't have the credit to pull it off for whatever reason, or maybe don't want to, then you can find a credit partner. So you might have one party bring in down payment money. You might have another party bring in the credit, and then you're in the mix because you bring the deal. We had one friend of ours that went out and, I don't know, at least 40 or 50, maybe more. I don't know. I might have gotten close to 100 of these single family properties. And that's what he was doing. He had all kinds of partners that he did that with that brought the credit, and he brought the down payment. And he wasn't really bringing anything. The down payment was coming in from other people he was raising money from, but he was bringing the deal. And the hustle was worth something. The relationships, you're overseeing the transaction. I think Robert's point is a good one, though, and that is that there's no point in syndicating if you want to play small. The whole point of syndicating is to go big. And because there are some expenses, and it's not just the expense of putting the syndication together and making sure you're compliant and well-advised, it's also the due diligence, the time, the travel, things you have to do to put the deal together. All of those things get amortized over the size of the portfolio. So building a bigger portfolio from a cost perspective is actually a better way to go. And then the only other, you know, thing to think about is obviously if you're going to build a $2 million portfolio, say for example, with $200,000 houses, you're going to end up having to do 10 transactions versus one apartment building. So I think if you're going to do that, then, you know, if you can find a way to get that to that inventory in a way that isn't as hard as just picking them up one at a time, but again, picking up somebody else's portfolio or a builder closeout or something like that, you may be able to find some time leverage in how you acquire as well.
One other point, I think, Greg, is that if you are developing properties, rather than just raise pure equity, cash, to take down the property, do the work, et cetera, it may be that you can look to raise money from a debt partner. We've seen several developers do this over the years, especially smaller developers that are building a house at a time, where they can pay a pretty good interest rate, 8%, 10%, 12%, because they don't need the money very long. Typical house construction project might be 4 to 6 months. You don't need all the money at once. So you could structure a debt offering, which again, you can think of in terms of a syndication, grouping together people's money. So it's not just a single lender. But the reality is there may be these kind of lenders in the marketplace already. So when you look at any deal, no matter what it is, you always ask, should it be my money? Should I raise money for it? What are the trade-offs? What are the costs? How does return work? And we don't just look at return when it comes to syndication. We can look at distributing the tax benefits and so on. So it's a lot to get your mind around, but getting started doesn't have to be that difficult. So you can certainly syndicate a single family house, especially to Russ's point, if your eyes are on doing bigger deals in the future. You get some track record, you get some experience, you get some confidence, and then you can do more. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions are answers. This next question comes all the way from beautiful Hawaii. Aloha, Russell and Robert. Once again, mahalo nui loa. Thank you very much for your efforts to inform and educate. I just finished reading the Real Asset Investment Report and had a few brain cells explode in the process. My questions are, first, what do you think the coming financial meltdown will look like in the U.S.? And secondly, it seems to me that gold could also be considered fiat. Its value is based on an agreement between people. Please explain why it wouldn't lose its value. I'm asking this question because of an article written by a person living in Venezuela who stated that the most important things to have stockpiled, obviously during their downturn, were food, firearms, drinking alcohol, and medicine. Gold was not useful to him in any way. I am deeply grateful for the amazing level of education and information you provide. Thanks, Karen from Lihu, Hawaii. All right, well, a couple of things in there. And the first is the coming financial meltdown. Now, there's a lot of folks that are recognizing we're long in the cycle. We see that, right? We had Dr. Doug Duncan come out to the Future of Money and Wealth and say that, you know, cycles don't end just because of old age. It's not just, well, it's been too long, it's time, you know, to turn. But the reality is, the longer it goes, the closer we are to a downturn. And what it's going to look like is going to depend on what the critical factor is that turns the economy down.
Well, I think nobody really knows what it's going to look like. I think a lot of people know there's going to be a change coming. I just sat down and started reading Jim Rickard's latest book, Aftermath, and he's been covering this ever since his first book in his series, Currency Wars. And he's one guy with an opinion. He's kind of a brainiac, and I think he's qualified to have an opinion. Although we've been following him for a long time, and he doesn't get everything right, we follow Peter Schiff. Peter hasn't gotten everything right. We follow Robert Kiyosaki. He hasn't gotten everything right. Chris Martinson, Adam Taggart, they haven't gotten everything right. We've put our neck out on the line a few times and we haven't gotten everything right. So all that to say, nobody really, really knows. But I think the one thing that we know for sure, and we wrote about this in the Real Asset Investing Report, we covered it again by way of an update in our presentation at The Future of Money and Wealth, which is a video series now that's available, and we can tell you how you can get that. But the concern in the world right now for Americans should be, and this is starting to come out from even hedge fund managers. Ray Dalio runs Bridgewater. It's the largest hedge fund on the planet, huge fund, has talked about making a bigger allocation towards gold. Obviously, central banks, if you follow the news last year, bought more gold than any time since Nixon took us off the gold standard in the early 70s and collapsed the dollar. So there has been a big move, a shift towards gold, both at the governmental level and at the big investor level. The price is reflecting some of that right now. So that is an indication that people are beginning to lose confidence in the dollar. Why would they lose confidence in the dollar? Well, Russia and China and Iran are among the leaders of a coalition that are trying to remove dependency globally on the dollar. They've created alternative banking systems. They're creating alternative gold systems. They're trading oil and creating these bilateral agreements between each other where they don't have to do their international trade in dollars. If that's all new to you and you're listening to this, then you should go to our special report section and download that report on real asset investing, because again, it's something we've been covering for 6 years now. So it's slow motion, but it's definitely happening and it's starting to make it more and more into the mainstream. So if the dollar actually loses its status, then people who are holding dollars because of its status will sell them. And when they do, the value will crash, because that's what happens when anybody sells anything. When there's more sellers than buyers, the value crashes, which means when the value of the dollar crashes, it takes more dollars to buy the same thing. That's called inflation. That's what happened in Venezuela. People look at the stock market in the United States. Oh, the stock market's doing so well. Well, the number one performing stock market in the world a couple years back, or maybe last year, was Venezuela. Why? Well, in bolivars, their currency was collapsing, and so the stock market in terms of value, in terms of bolivars, were going up. The problem is, out on the street, the bolivars weren't worth anything, which is why your friend says, hey, what mattered is I needed actual goods that people wanted to barter with. So yes, if there's a breakdown of a currency in a society, you're going to need short-term supplies while the authorities try to figure out what the new medium of exchange is going to be. And you're going to need to have things that you can trade with until that new medium of exchange is introduced. And so at the street level, absolutely. But higher up, you're going to need to have something that's universally accepted in any currency, whatever that currency is. And Jim Rickards, who I mentioned earlier, wrote a book called The New Case for Gold. If you haven't read that book, you might take a look at it. And he just explains why, over thousands and thousands of years of human history, gold has been, and up until 1971, was the standard that everybody in the world agreed upon is what money was. And I think the behavior of the central banks, who are insiders when it comes to money, if you think about it, any business or commodity or anything, the people who are on the inside know first. Well, obviously, when it comes to currencies, the insiders are the central banks. What's their behavior telling you? Gold is valuable because they're stocking up on it. So there's always going to be a market for gold. Even Maduro, who's the dictator in charge of Venezuela, is trying to raise cash because there's embargoes and things on selling his oil, which is a big part of Venezuela's economy, because he can't generate money with oil, he's selling gold. And so if you're going to have any significant amount of wealth and you're going to want to be able to pivot into whatever currency du jour is, and you want to know that there's going to be some degree of universal acceptance, you have to pick something. And we, I think, can make the argument, and Jim Rickards does a great job making the argument, that something is gold. So it's not an either or. At the street level, when you're trying to survive day to day, you need things to trade with. But big picture, if you want to preserve, transport, and be able to pivot liquid wealth, and you have to store it somewhere, it's hard to beat gold. Now, I know there's a bunch of crypto enthusiasts who are going to say crypto's the answer, and that may be. I'm hardly qualified to be an expert on any of that, but crypto's relatively new. And so I'm not saying, again, it's an either or, but I my personal opinion, and that's all it is, just my personal opinion, I just think that any real estate investor, any investor who cares about having long-term preservation of wealth that's liquid and portable outside of the banking system with no counterparty risk would be hard-pressed to find something better for that purpose than silver and gold.
If you want to prepare for what might be coming in kind of a meltdown, a couple of great resources, the book Prosper by Adam Taggart and Chris Martinson, unbelievable. And they talk a lot about stockpiling food and being ready for any kind of a downturn. And yet they're not alarmists. They're not hoarders. They're not preppers. They're just guys that are smart and are looking ahead at possibilities. And they meet that side of the equation Russ was talking about. Because here's what happens in any kind of a downturn. If you study this stuff, first of all, the power goes out. Power is going to be out for weeks. How do you exchange cryptocurrency with no cell signal and no power? Think about that for a minute. And then the things you really need, like water and food, and one of the things Kiyosaki talks about is toilet paper, and more important than firearms, ammunition, and alcohol for sure, and all those kinds of things. That's just to get you through the immediate. The point that you made about the person in Venezuela saying gold was not useful in any way, well, I'm definitely going to take issue with that, because you can go to any economy in the world and trade gold for something of value. He could have traded into dollars, into euros, into yen, into anything. And locally, if you find a sophisticated person, you're going to be able to trade gold for something useful, like a trip out of Dodge. So gold doesn't do anything. It doesn't create return. You can't eat it. But it is a preservation of wealth. So those two ideas together, that's how you prepare for what's coming. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. More when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Hey, it's Robert Helms. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. I want to personally invite you to come see an amazing real estate market that combines excellent cash flow, offshore diversification, and what we affectionately call lifestyle investing. Come join me from November 15th to 18th in the beautiful country of Belize. The Real Estate Guys have been bringing investors to Belize for more than 14 years now, and our discovery trip is designed to show you the market like nobody else can. Sure, Belize is breathtakingly beautiful. The people are wonderful. And wait till you taste the food. But the real opportunity is the real estate investment potential. 2018 was the biggest year in tourism Belize has ever witnessed, and this year is coming on strong. How does that translate to real estate investment? That's what you have to come see. There's all types of opportunity in Belize, including both long and short-term rentals, commercial and retail triple net properties, business opportunities, land acquisition, development, agriculture, and more. And as the only country in Latin America with English as its official language, it's easy to understand the law. Property rights are strong, and contracts are in English. And in Ambergris Key, a unique situation exists where demand for rentals continues to outstrip supply, creating a compelling environment for investors. So come see for yourself. Join me November 15th through 18th in Ambergris Key, Belize, as we study the market, learn about the sustainable drivers, and tour lots of beautiful real estate. And like all of our field trips, there are no properties for sale during the weekend. Rather, you'll meet lots of local providers that will help educate you about the market so that you can follow up with them after the trip if the market is interesting to you. But that ball's in your court. You'll receive their contact details, but they won't receive yours unless you give it to them. You've heard about Belize and the Real Estate Guys for all these years. Now come see what all the excitement is about. Plus, we'll have lots of time over meals and activities to talk about all things real estate. To get the details, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click on events, where you'll find the Belize Discovery Trip. Once you register, you'll get information about our group hotel rates as well as travel details. So join me in Belize November 15th through 18th. It's a beautiful country with lots of amazing possibilities, and the only thing missing is you. Go to realestateguysradio.com under events. I look forward to seeing you in beautiful Belize.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, I'm G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, a second look at the Federal Reserve. And you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Hey, if you ever wanted to do bigger deals using other people's money, then you ought to come out to The Secrets of Successful Syndication. It happens at the end of September in Dallas, Texas. All the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. This question comes from Bobby in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hey guys, do you have any other courses for sale besides how to win funds and influence people? Well, that's a great question. We have our sales training, How to Win Funds, available in a video course. We also have The Future of Money and Wealth that Russ talked about earlier, which is a two-day event that we taped with just monstrous faculty. Really, really great stuff. If you want information on that, just send an email to future@realestateguysradio.com and know that we're working on additional courses for sale because we recognize that as much as we love live events and we love to meet our listeners, not everybody can come out to live events and not everyone that listens to us even lives in the same country we broadcast from. So thanks for that, Bobby. Next question comes from Chuck in Potomac Falls, Virginia. Hey guys, your content and format are outstanding. My partners, who are my sons, and I have learned so much from you all. You've spoken several times about the advantage of getting up to 10 Fannie Mae 30-year fixed mortgages. However, because those loans and the title for those needs to be in the name of an individual, not an LLC, we have opted instead for commercial loans with less favorable loan terms but better liability protection. Are we missing something by going this route? Okay, great question, Chuck. And I'm going to hand that one over to the financial strategist.
Yeah, so this comes up all the time, and it's a lot. And so I'm just going to try to cover it. Liability comes from two different places. One, it comes from the property to you, and it comes from you to your assets. So if you're really going to do asset protection, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I've spent a lot of time with attorneys on this, you want to make sure you protect both routes. And so if you've protected the route where you are not holding any of your assets in your own name, but you have an asset protection trust, then if you own something in your own name, but there's nothing there, in other words, you've stripped the equity out, you have a big loan, maybe you've placed a second on that through an entity that you hold offshore or someplace that would be very difficult to find or get, and now you've got liens on your properties up to the full value or in excess of the full value, there's no equity in the property to claim. And so that's one way that you protect a property. If the property were to get sued, your first line of defense is your insurance. And then from your insurance, then it would be the entity. In your case, you don't have an entity in the property. They would come to you. But when they come to you, you don't have anything. And if you run it right, you never have anything. So if some people are willing to take the risk and just stand behind their insurance in order to get the better loan terms. If you're in a highly litigious property or state or environment where you feel or the rest of your asset protection isn't strong and you felt like if they came through the property and got to me, it's all over, then yeah, you know, you're going to consider the worst loan terms as a premium you pay to have that insurance. But for the most part, in the real world, great insurance policies and good business practices and then having good asset protection overall is probably enough. Now, again, I'm not giving advice, and you just have to decide. There's a lot of reasons why people graduate up to commercial properties, and that's because the numbers are better and they justify the lesser favorable loan terms. But that's kind of the nickel tour on that. Attorneys are going to disagree. Maybe you're going to have to just look at the situation. There is no safe anything in this world. We could get hit by an asteroid as we're doing this broadcast. So you just never know what's going to happen in the world. You have to play the probabilities. But part of it is just understanding what all of your options are and how it really works. And my experience has been that the insurance guy, his answer to everything is insurance. The lawyer, their answer to everything is an entity. I think there's more to that. You just need to sit down and get yourself educated about that part of it. But just consider the risk, not just from the property to you, but from you to the property. And if you've sealed off all of your assets from you, then even if they get to you, it doesn't matter. And it's kind of a morbid example, but the Kennedy family is set up that way. And way back in the day, you can look this up in the history books. I'm old enough to remember when it happened. Ted Kennedy got in a car accident with a woman, drove the car off the bridge, and a woman died. Family sued. Ted Kennedy didn't have anything. Well, everybody knows that the Kennedys are filthy rich. I guess filthy rich isn't a good word, but very rich. And they couldn't get anything because he had asset protection in place and such that when they sued Ted Kennedy, there was nothing to claim because he didn't own anything.
All right, good stuff. I don't have much more to add to that. We had more questions to get to, but that'll have to wait till next time. So if you want to add your question to the list, go to their website at realestateguysradio.com. Click Ask the Guys. Hey, if you want to hang out with Robert Kiyosaki, Harry Dent, Garrett Sutton, an amazing attorney, CPA Tom Wheelwright, and the Real Estate Guys, they come on out to AIMNATCOM, that's the Apartment Investor National Conference with Brad Sumrock. It happens on Saturday, August 10th. You can get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We'll see you there. Thanks for all your great questions today, and until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.